nos manejan mal.
Dame, 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 dame todo el power para que te demos en la madre. Gimme, 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 gimme todo el poder so I can come around to joder. Dame, 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 dame todo el power para que te demos en la madre. Gimme, 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 gimme todo el poder so I can come around to joder. Dame, 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 dame todo el poder.
Hi, this is Background Briefing. I'm Toby Miller. I'm sitting in for Ian Masters. And joining us now is Dr. André Dorce Ramos, a lecturer researcher in the Communication Sciences Department of the Universidad Autónoma Metropolitana Coajimalpa in Mexico City. In addition to that position, André is also the ombudsman for the public broadcasting Canal 22, Channel 22, television station, and he is currently working on a book about critical perspectives on media convergence, as well as collaborating with several local and regional initiatives for progressive change in media legislation in Mexico. Oye, André, how are you, sir?
Just very happy to hear you, and thank you very much for having me in your show now.
It's great to have you. Sorry we weren't able to start the show with you, but it's good to have you to take us to the top of the hour. André, I think I'm right in saying December 1, just a couple of days from now, is when the new president of Mexico, Enrique Peña Nieto, comes to power. Your response to that?
Well, first of all, you have to take into account, of course, that the feeling right now is it's kind of very sour in a sense, and sad as well. You have to take into account that Presidente Calderón, who's now leaving office, is giving us a country with approximately 90,000 deaths resulting from his war to the drug cartels, etc., with no clear and effective strategy. So, in that sense, there seems to be a lot of sadness in a lot of people, but also a certain kind of weird relief. In the sense that this strategy will be stopped, probably stopped, and we now face a new situation with President-elect Peña Nieto. So there seems to be some hope that this approach will be changed substantially.
I guess one of the problems, of course, that doesn't go away is here in the United States, we supply the arms for all sides of the conflict. We also supply the demand for the drugs. So what can Mexico do on its own, absent criminalization of arms here and decriminalization of drugs here?
Yes, of course. That's a very important point. And wouldn't seem to be able so far to build and to construct a joint policy to try to tackle this. And I don't see any, soon solution to this kind of problem, because you have to take into account also growing rates of poverty in Mexico and inequality. So it's a rather complex problem that I don't think a comprehensive drug policy would ever solve, actually.
Right. Now, thinking at the media level, where you're a specialist, you mentioned some optimism, some hope in terms of the new administration. People all around the world, people I know from all walks of life, have been very inspired by the social movement of young people, particularly university students, college students, Yo Soy 132. I wonder if you could tell us a bit about that movement, how it arose during, of course, the election that resulted in the success of Enrique Peña Nieto, and where you think it's headed now.
Well, as you know, first of July, we had election day, and before that, we had the whole electoral campaign, and the main three candidates were, traveling through many, public places, doing their job, trying to publicize their political programs, etc. Enrique Peña Nieto went to Universidad Iberoamericana, the Iberoamericana University, which is an elite university for Mexicans, and he did very something. He did when he was at the Ibero, he kind of proclaimed. The media that covered the visit of Peña Nieto to Ibero proclaimed that some students who were legitimately protesting against his presence in the university, claiming that while he was governor of the Estado de México, he actually allowed the assassination of peasants in a peaceful protest. So the media, the main media, mostly Televisa and some other outlets, said that these young students that were protesting against Peña Nieto were, you know, members of the opposing parties, etc. And students basically reacted very strongly against that sort of coverage, you know, claiming that they were not part of any petition group or anything. They were just, you know, young students protesting against something they would claim was unfair and illegal. So that gave the context in which Yo Soy 132 was formed.
And they held up their student ID cards, didn't they, to say, look, I really am a student at the Universidad Iberoamericana. And
exactly.
Then it became a case of not just the 131 that were protesting,
exactly,
but the idea of an endlessly expanding group. And the media became a big focus of their demands, didn't it?
Yes, as you rightly say, they produced this small video where all, you know, the participating members of that protest were, you know, showing their IDs, university IDs. They were 131, and they put it up in YouTube, and then it kind of became like the main theme that they were trying to, you know, actually asking for better news coverage. And then the media became like the focus of the whole movement, and they, you know, the street protests became bigger and bigger, and they gained a huge momentum before the election day. They you know, kind of like articulated in many ways with some other social movements around the world, particularly with the Occupy movement and Indignados in Spain, etc. So it was quite a show of engagement and interest for the betterment of the country in a time where most people were thinking less about the students.
Now, one of the things that Mexico faces, like the United States, like so many countries, is, depending on your point of view, an oligopolistic or monopolistic media system. What sorts of reforms are needed to television, radio, telecommunications in Mexico, do you think?
Well, we just had a very interesting meeting in Guadalajara, where I actually also participated with Yo Soy 132, in trying to figure out which kind of media reform we would need to change these monopolistic and oligopolistic practices that have characterized most of Mexican media landscape. There's been a lot of work, actually, through the last 20 years, and there's many, you know, social civil society groups that have worked on it, also within the universities as well. And we have actually produced a very specific proposal that tries to redistribute the licenses for the management of media, electronic media in general. So one really important thing is how the electromagnetic spectrum is being, you know, shared or
allocated,
split between different actors
and
companies, and that's one of the main points. And we're trying now. We're hoping that with the change of government that's happening next Saturday, will we have a chance to push forward this new initiative in terms of trying to get to this better, more democratizing media law.
Now, that's interesting because, of course, the political party that Peña Nieto works for, works with, leads, depending on your perspective, is the Partido Revolucionario Institucional, the PRI, which has governed Mexico for most of the last century and is precisely, in a sense, the institution most clearly responsible for this incredible concentration of media power. So do you think it's realistic to look to the PRI as a potential source of reform?
Well, probably it's not realistic. Nevertheless, the PRI right now is not, probably is not exactly the same, and they're not in total control of the government right now. There's a bigger opposition now. They're going to have to negotiate a lot in order to regain some sort of legitimacy. Because, as you know, there were lots of claims that the elections were not fair and probably legal, although there was no... we couldn't actually produce any legal, I put this into bracket, legal evidence that it was not, you know, specifically legal. But nevertheless, what I'm trying to say is that they lack, Peña Nieto's now government is going to lack a lot of legitimacy within different political groups. So they need to negotiate. In that sense, this could be an opportunity to push forward this reform, this media reform. But also, we haven't seen any, you know, positive sign that tell us otherwise. Anyway,
I'm speaking with Dr. André Dorce Ramos, a lecturer researcher at the Communication Sciences Department of the Universidad Autónoma Metropolitana Coajimalpa in Mexico City. He's also ombudsman with public broadcasting Canal 22. Could I ask you, André Dorce Ramos, yes, about Canal 22, Channel 22, which of course many people watch here in the United States as well as in Mexico, and your role as ombudsman, is that any kind of model of what a reformed media landscape might look like?
Well, in this media reform, the most complete media reform proposal that has been put forward has been done by the Media Asociación Mexicana de Derecho a la Información, which has been brought together lots of academicians, you know, media producers, and different sectors of society to put together this very sophisticated media reform. In that reform, in that proposal, we are actually suggesting that to have a sort of media ombudsman for the whole country would be something positive. That's one possible way to go. Also, that all media outlets have some sort of ethical codes and someone like an ombudsperson to try to deal with and interact with audiences in terms of what they need, how they are being represented, etc. So in terms of channel, what we're doing in Channel 22, in a way, is definitely a model, but Channel 22 is not the only instance of this kind of work being done in Mexico. There's also a few other public outlets, media outlets, that are working with this figure. So we're still trying to consolidate the way in which we work with this, and we're also trying to understand how, you know, efficient and powerful could be this be to mediate between the media institutions and the audiences.
Could you give us an example, André, of your work at Channel 22, Canal 22, in that role? What are some of the things that you do to represent the interests of the audience?
Well, there's different things. There's sort of more, everyday things, very small things that audiences, TV viewers ask for Canal 22, like, you know, trying to change the schedule and the way in which some shows are programmed and broadcast in terms of the time where they are broadcast, etc. Those are kind of like very...
sort of nuts and bolts issues, aren't they? Yeah, very pragmatic ones.
Yeah, very pragmatic issues, but they are important as well, because they're talking about their everyday lives and how they actually work and use entertainment and information as well. So those things have to be taken into account. In that regard, we try to make proposals or suggestions to recommendations to the authorities within the channel to try to take this into account and be more flexible in the way they program schedule their shows and their programs. But that's one example. But there's also some other things, like more controversial things about how religion is being represented in some shows. So some people that are religious, they complain that they're being misrepresented, and some, you know, I try then to mediate and trying to find a reasonable answer from the station, from the authorities of the station, trying to explain why they show these sort of representations and why they think they should do that, and then we follow up into that the answer that we put forward to the audiences, and we try to sort of put the two sides in a better place in which there's more understanding on the way television works, and also the way in which audiences, you know, legitimately can demand for the public station some certain types of change.
Could I ask you one more question, Andre? It relates to both this question of widening inequality in Mexico that you raised earlier and this other question of representation that you've just mentioned. I'm interested in what can be done for those groups who are traditionally silenced, excluded, misrepresented. And of course, these vary across the world and across time. But I'm thinking in particular maybe of non-Spanish speakers amongst many indigenous peoples in Mexico. Yes, I'm thinking of Afro-Mexicans, campesinos, peasants, and so forth. What kind of right of redress or right to representation should there be, say, for Afro-Mexicans?
Well, that's you know, clearly that's a very important issue here in Mexico, where we have actually for whole Latin America, I would say, but here in Mexico we have a huge intercultural diversity, and clearly when we have this media monopoly, that is certainly not open to hold this whole diversity and trying to, you know, cover the stories, showing their faces on TV, their stories, etc. We definitely need not only to represent them, but also to give the chance for many of us to self-representation. And that's one main point that we're trying to push forward in this media reform proposal that we put together, which is that in terms of regional media, there's a lot of groups that should have definitely their radio station, community radio station, or community stations, also for local TV stations, but also trying to find a way to articulate this in a national level, and also trying to show how diverse we are and how the conditions under which we could actually kind of start to see each other. Now, in terms of Afro-Mexicans, of Afro-descendants, Mexican Afro-descendants, it's interesting because it's a very, very small portion of people. Actually, right now, there's some studies that have been made in terms of trying to historicize the censuses that were made during the colony the colonization process by the Spanish monarchy. And basically, at some point in the 18th century, Afro-Mexicans were the second largest population before even Spaniards. So after indigenous people, Afro-descendants were the second largest population in Mexico. Nowadays, according to CONAPRED, which is the National Council to Prevent Discrimination, it's less than 1% of the Mexican population, which is basically based in Guerrero, Oaxaca, Coahuila, Michoacán, different states. Mm-hmm. So they do remain quite invisible, partly because the original condition as a slave, but partly also because the way in which mestizaje, which is the mixture of different heritages, actually works as a way of thinking about identity in Mexico and in Latin America. So the challenges are many because CONAPRED has now established that also, like indigenous people or Afro-descendants in Mexico are the poorest and the groups with more, you know, social vulnerability and poverty, etc. So there's a huge problem there, and also we think that hearing their voices, seeing them representing themselves and talking to each other, we could have a better picture of the different and the diversity, the cultural diversity that lies and lives in Mexico.
I've been speaking with André Dorce Ramos. André, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Toby.
André is a lecturer researcher at the Communication Sciences Department of the Universidad Autónoma Metropolitana Coajimalpa in Mexico. He is also ombudsman with public broadcasting Canal 22, Channel 22. He's currently working on a book on critical perspectives for media convergence and collaborating with various regional and local initiatives for progressive change to media legislation in Mexico. Well, this has been Background Briefing. I'm Toby Miller, sitting in for Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and the Soundproof Booth. This program is available for streaming and podcasting at ianmasters.com, and you can follow me at tobymiller.org. Ian will return on Sunday at 11 a.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.
Took the kids to the park and disappeared.